Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Thursday, May 16th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The top state official in charge of water quality says cruise ships have cleaned up their act considerably over the last 15 years. Michelle Bonnet-Hale is the director of the Division of Water for the Department of Environmental Conservation. She spoke with the Sitka Chamber of Commerce on Wednesday. Hale was on the road to assure the public that a controversial bill passed this spring by the legislature would not impair the state's ability to ensure that cruise ship wastewater met quality standards. House Bill 80 repealed several of the regulations placed on cruise ships by the public in a 2006 citizen initiative and allowed water samples to be taken in mixing zones behind ships rather than at the point of discharge. Hale told the chamber that the cruise industry has already begun to upgrade its sanitation technology in 2004 following several high-profile pollution cases involving fecal coliforms. She said the initiative addressed a problem that had already been solved. She said the state's remaining concerns were the levels of ammonia, copper, nickel, and zinc. Here's a brief excerpt from her remarks on copper.
In 2003, researchers in the state of Washington found in one study that they're trying to replicate now, that copper at low concentrations in freshwater had an impact on fish's juvenile salmon's ability to smell. That's called their olfactory capability. And we know how important that is because we know that it's their ability to smell that gets the fish back to their streams and rivers of origin. So it was a very alarming study. When the researchers did that study, they pointed out in the study itself that additional research was needed and definitely that this study couldn't be extrapolated to salt water, so additional research in salt water was needed. In salt water, there's a couple of things that happen. One, fish's bodies change when they go from fresh water to salt water, so their physiology changes. The way they take things in changes. That's one. And then the second is that fresh water, especially fresh water in a place like Alaska, is a very pure water. And salt water is simply not pure. It's pure salt water, but there's a lot in it. So that also has an effect on what happens to the copper. So recently, there's a draft study by those same researchers, and it hasn't been peer-reviewed yet. It's still draft, but it's a study by those same researchers on the effects of copper in salt water on fish. Those same researchers found that the effects on fish in salt water of copper in salt water happen at about 50 times the concentration that it happened in fresh water.
That was Michelle Bonnet-Hale, the director of the state's Division of Water, speaking to the Sitka Chamber of Commerce on Wednesday. Hale is a chemist by profession and a lifelong Alaskan. She told the chamber that her staff knew how to protect water. "We have the tools," she said. There is a significant amount of opinion, even in the scientific community, opposing Hale's assessment. You can find links to previous reporting, including testimony on House Bill 80, at our website, kcaw.org. You can also listen to Hale's full remarks. Winter king salmon trolling was slow in southeast Alaska for much of this past year, very slow, but the commercial catch brought sustained record-high prices. According to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the fleet landed just under 26,400 kings during the winter season, which runs from mid-October through April. The state manages the winter fishery with a 45,000 king cap. This winter's total harvest was 55% of last year and 70% of the five-year average, according to troll management biologist Patty Scannis.
Catch rates this year were, they averaged about 8 kings per landing, and that's down from the five-year average. It was 10, almost 11 per landing, and the 10-year is about 12, so catch rates do seem to be down. There's, you know, no doubt a number of factors that contribute to that. I've heard that the water was unusually cold, and the fish seem to be distributed a little bit differently this year than we normally see. There were actually quite low catches in some of the areas where it's normally the best, and there were some fairly good catches in areas that we don't often see much action in the winter from.
Skinner says that includes Sumner Strait in southern southeast.
I looked at the catch distribution since January 1st for this year, and what I saw was the most was taken near Sitka, which is normal. However, it was only 44%, and that was followed by Sumner Strait, and that is rather unusual. We don't usually see a very big portion of the winter catch coming from Summer Strait. The third highest was Yakutat Bay, and the fourth was Lower Chatham Strait.
Skanna says this winter's dockside prices were higher than ever on a region-wide level. Kings averaged $10 a pound throughout Southeast for four straight weeks.
We've never seen that. There have been a couple of years where the price may have reached $10 a pound for, you know, a few of the processors, but yet the region average was below 10. So this was certainly very high. It was over $10 a pound between roughly February 17th and March 16th.
The market held exceptionally high prices through the end of the winter season and into the spring. 441 trawlers made landings this winter, which is about on par for the past decade. The Kings had an average weight of about 12.5 pounds, which is a bit bigger than last year. An estimated 13% of the winter Kings were Alaska hatchery fish, which compares with 11% over the past 10 years. Since the winter season closed, Southeast trawlers have been targeting hatchery-reared Kings in the spring fishery, which is much more limited in time and area. A second measure transferring Tongass National Forest land to Sea Alaska is before Congress today. It's stopgap legislation turning 3,600 acres over to the Southeast-based Regional Native Corporation. Two parcels are proposed, one on the Cleveland Peninsula and the other on Election Creek on Prince of Wales Island. A much larger bill before Congress would transfer about 70,000 acres. Sea Alaska CEO Chris McNeil says it's needed to keep logging operations going.
Obviously, we'd like the more systemic bill, but it's important for us to be able to recognize that we have important timing and the operational considerations to achieve, and that's the reason why there's the second bill, which is really a subset of the first.
Both measures are sponsored by Alaska Congressman Don Young. They and four others will go before the House Committee on Natural Resources Subcommittee on Indian and Alaska Native Affairs at 10 a.m. Alaska time. Similar legislation is before the Senate. The House version of the larger measure includes more of what Sea Alaska asked for. The Senate bill is the result of negotiations with environmental groups, small communities, tour operators, and other critics. Young's measure are House Bill 740 and House Resolution 1306. The main Senate bill, sponsored by Lisa Murkowski and Mark Begich, is Senate Bill 340. A Petersburg fisherman has recovered more than half of the hand-carved cedar paddles that had been lost by the One People Canoe Society late last month. A local hunting guide located their missing canoe as well. Two of the group's canoes broke loose while under tow during bad weather on their journey to the historic Shakes Tribal House rededication in Wrangell. The canoers were thrilled to hear about the finds. Matt Lichtenstein reports.
When Petersburg's Jeff Erickson heard a radio story about the lost canoe and cedar paddles, he thought he could help. Erickson's a longtime commercial fisherman and has beachcombed in Seymour Canal for 20 years, so he was sure he knew exactly where the paddles would wash up. He headed to Seymour just before the herring fishery there early this month.
We got up there in the middle of the night, anchored up, and I got up first thing in the morning, went to the beach, and there was a life jacket. And I knew that I was close, and I also knew since it was bright orange that nobody had been on the beaches yet. So I just a couple more steps, and lo and behold, there was a paddle all wrapped up in the seaweed. And I'm like, wow, it's a great day. And I went a little farther, found another paddle, and then another paddle. So I found four paddles at the first beach.
When Erickson returned to his boat, the rest of his crew wanted to help. He says they searched about 12 miles of beach over a three-day period and found a total of 24 paddles and about the same number of life jackets as well as some seat cushions. The crew of the state research vessel Medea agreed to take the paddles and gear back to members of the One People Canoe Society in Juneau. Erickson was happy with his crew for taking part in the search, and he calls the experience of finding the paddles spiritual.
And these are all hand-carved cedar paddles. The more I hear about it, the more I know how special each and every one of these paddles are individuals, and they have a lot of meaning to them. And just finding them and seeing them and the difference in each one, it was really moving to be able to recover them and knowing they're going back to the right people that own them. So that's really It's really awesome.
Erickson says he feels very strongly that the paddles need to be returned, and if anyone else finds more, they should return them as well. Making the individualized paddles was part of the experience for the canoers as well as those who helped sponsor their trip. Alicia Chilton is one of the organizers of the One People Canoe Society in Juneau.
It's absolutely amazing. I didn't realize it was one person that had found them, and I would love to meet Jeff in person. It's been absolutely fabulous, though, having some of our gear recovered, especially the paddles.
The Yakutat and Juneau crew's paddles washed away when two of their canoes broke loose while under tow in rough weather near Seymour. Chilton thinks the group lost 42 paddles in all. They initially recovered both canoes, but one broke loose a second time and remained missing. Chilton says the group received word last week that a Petersburg hunting guide, Scott Newman, found that missing canoe in Gambier Bay off Admiralty and moved it to a more protected spot.
It's definitely repairable, and we've got a couple different fishing vessels that have offered to pick the canoe up onto their vessel and bring it all the way to Juneau for us. Or Scott has also offered to bring it into Petersburg, where we're working with Alaska Marine Lines to get the canoe ship back to Juneau.
One People Canoe Society crews from Juneau, Yakutat, Sitka, and Cake joined others from Prince of Wales and Wrangell for the rededication of the Sheikh's Tribal House in Wrangell early this month.
You know, I just want to give a big hoo-ha out to everyone that has kept safe prayers for us throughout the entire journey, and to every fisherman and beachcomber and community member down in Southeast Alaska keeping an eye out for helping us replace our gear. It means a lot to us.
Anyone who finds more of the group's paddles or other gear can contact Alicia Chilton at 907-209-5616. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. It's currently 44 degrees downtown Sitka. It's going to be mostly cloudy today with highs around 54. Listening to KCAW Sitka.